Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
The same-sex marriage survey produced a clear result for the yes case. And those on the no side are not quibbling with the result. They're agreeing that the legislation should be changed to reflect the view of the majority of Australians. But on the no side, people raised significant matters about religious freedom in a post-same-sex marriage environment. What about the right of Christians to express a view about traditional marriage without fear of losing their jobs? What about the right of charities to hold a traditional view of marriage and still receive funding? What about the right of parents to choose what their children are taught about sexuality at school? These issues are indeed covered by international rights covenants on freedom of speech and freedom of religion. They're not reflected, though, in federal legislation in Australia. And indeed, a committee of the United Nations recently drew attention to Australia's lack of religious freedom protections at a federal level. Well, with the legislation making its way through the Parliament and the Prime Minister wanting the matter to be over before Christmas, partly to see a political victory by the end of the year and partly to get the issue out of the way, the government has called into being a committee to look at the religious freedom question. It will be viewed by many as a way of sidelining this issue, at least in the short term. But the committee does have to report by March, and there's a parliamentary committee that's also looking at the same question. It means that 2018 will continue to be a year in which religious freedom, freedom of conscience and freedom of expression in Australia will be very much at the forefront of Australian politics. Well, the panel of experts brought into being by the government is chaired by Philip Ruddock. He's a former Attorney General, a former Minister for Immigration, and in fact, the second longest-serving MP in the history of Federation. The other eminent Australians on the committee, Rosalind Croucher, the President of the Human Rights Commission, the retired Federal Court Judge Annabel Bennett, and Jesuit priest Frank Brennan. And you can hear a podcast with Frank Brennan on these issues also on the Open House podcast site. Well, to gauge his views on the question of marriage, the nature of religious freedom in Australia, and how the committee will go about its work, on Open House, we spoke with Chairman Philip Ruddock. Your appointment has not been universally greeted. People have said all kinds of things.
No, I can't imagine that.
What do you make of the criticisms?
Well, I'm not sure. I think that I come to the task having been a long-standing Minister for Immigration and Multicultural Affairs, and I have a passionate commitment to our cultural, racial and religious diversity.
Yes, I remember in a private conversation, which I'm now going to repeat with your permission, you once said to me that the role of immigration minister was about nation building. I was really interested to hear you say that. What did you mean when you said that?
Well, you're putting in place the building blocks for Australia's future. And I think we've demonstrated that we can bring people together who have settled in Australia from all over the world, and they can live together and work together and function effectively together as a nation, and we do. And we're an example to the rest of the world that diversity is a strength, not a weakness.
Mm. But were you concerned, Mr. Ruddock, at the UN Human Rights Committee's report card on the religious protection framework? In fact, the very thing that you've been asked to report on.
Well, obviously, I have to make a judgment in relation to the matter in terms of the evidence that we receive. I don't sense that there is any overt religious discrimination in Australia. There are individuals who occasionally opine about matters involving the faith of others that they don't share, where you might wish to look at the extent to which the law provides adequate protection for those who may feel that they've been unreasonably criticised. But look, I mean, I think that we are an exemplar in relation to these issues. We have people who are of Islamic faith, and there are various sects in Australia. Some of them, if you were in other parts of the world, you would not be able to practice your faith here in Australia. I mean, one of the groups that I regularly meet with those involved in the Ahmadiyyan Muslim community. Mm-hmm. The Ahmadiyyans are the subject of discrimination and have come to Australia as refugees.
Yes.
From Pakistan.
Yes, yes, we've met with one of them.
Discriminated against in Indonesia. I think Australia hosts people of every potential faith that you can imagine without any form of discrimination.
But well, certainly that's the view that I've had as well. And most people who engage in the public debate have that view, and Australia is hailed as a successful multi-faith, multicultural nation because of that. But you've got this other thing that's stepping in to the public square, and that is extreme forms of, I would say, vicious language used against people for holding a faith view. The use of the word bigot during the same-sex marriage campaign, for example, is a perfect example of that. The sacking of a young woman because she expressed a view that it was okay to vote no. The campaign to deregister a medical practitioner because she was in an advertisement on the no side. Have you seen this before in public life?
I haven't, but I think it was in context of a difficult debate that was being conducted, and I think we've moved on from that. I think those sorts of observations that you've made are less likely to occur. I mean, one of the things that I'd be more concerned about are those areas of Australia which perhaps don't necessarily experience our cultural diversity. They're a little mono, if I can call them that. Sometimes they're afraid of what they don't know. I think it is important to recognise that what we do well is not perfect. And sometimes you can look at how you can provide appropriate protection. And obviously that is something that I and the group that I've been asked to work with will obviously look at when we undertake our inquiry.
So we're looking at the nature of free speech in many respects. It's the right to hold a view and to speak about that view and sometimes to act on the basis of that view. Do you think we have enough protection for free speech in this country?
Look, I'm prepared to look at it, and let me say that. I am one who takes the view that what we do perhaps better than they do in most other parts of the world. That's something that I've been very proud of and have put very strongly when I've met with people in international forums. But we're not perfect. If I was asked about how we handle First Nations people's issues, I would say up front, we haven't handled it well. We're putting an enormous amount of effort in. We think we can do better. And hopefully, if you look at what we're trying to do better, you may be able to also improve your performance.
Yeah.
And I say that in relation to issues relating to gender, and particularly some of the issues of domestic violence and issues involving protection of women and children. I don't go out into the community and argue we're perfect. I think we're very conscious of the need to work positively on these issues to get better outcomes. And I'm happy to share with other people what we're doing, but I won't do it from the basis of saying we've done it perfectly well.
Do you accept, Philip, that there's anxiety now amongst people, particularly who voted no, about whether they'll be able to express that view without being discriminated against, without losing their job, without charities losing their charitable status? Is that, in your mind, a genuine concern?
I don't know the extent to which it is a particular act or one example which you would be critical of, or whether it's something that is more widespread. Obviously, we will...
Well, in a sense, we don't know, because the act to amend the Marriage Act, the bill hasn't even been passed. So a lot of this will play out next year. But so there's this argument that says before it becomes an issue, we ought to just place those protections, make religious expression an attribute under the Anti-Discrimination Act alongside religion itself, sexuality, marital status, disability, and so on.
Well, look, I mean, if you go back, Stephen, I mean, one of the things that I sought to remove when I was Minister, Attorney General, mm-hmm. was discrimination against people in same-sex relationships. Mm. Because there was a host of legislative measures that did act in quite a discriminatory way against people who were in such relationships. And I sought to remove it. It didn't change my mind in relation to marriage, which I think has always been seen as a union between man and a woman, and primarily to provide a secure environment in which to bring children into this world and where they're going to have appropriate role models. And that's not to criticise people who are in same-sex relationships or those who are single mums. I mean, obviously, those are issues about which one makes no judgment.
Well, now, Philip, I mean, you've just expressed a view there which some people will say makes you worthy of criticism because you've expressed a view.
Why?
Well, you'd have to ask those people that, but you know,
I have been very, very much to the forefront in ensuring that we are non-discriminatory in the way in which we deal with these issues.
Yeah, but the fact that you've expressed that view now makes you a subject of attack. At least that's what Christians in the community have experienced during this campaign. And then the yes case will say, oh, get over it. You know, we've been discriminated against for years. It's now, you know, your turn. Here's a payback.
Well, this is the community. I don't want to see any form of discrimination against people in the broader Australian community in any form whatsoever. But look, I mean,
well, then the question that you've been—I'm sorry to interrupt again, Philip—but then you've been asked to inquire into what form that protection should there be protection in the law. What form should it take?
We've been asked to look at how, if there are issues that need to be addressed, how you move forward. And that's what I want to do in a constructive and thoughtful way.
Well, you're a very steady and cautious person, but I mean, I've expressed the view publicly, and I would be interested in hearing you on this, that had the government been more upfront and taken a leadership role in achieving the non-discrimination against same-sex couples, as you've put it, placing before the people, rather than a simple question, a question that included some reassurance about freedom of speech in relation to faith, that it would not have been as fractious a debate.
Look, I'm not going to opine on those matters, Stephen. My view is that the plebiscite was a way of resolving issues that in both major political parties have been exceedingly divisive. And you had people coming from different perspectives in the political spectrum, the way in which I think the matter could be resolved was to get an expression and, you know, I mean, this was the Abbott view. The way forward was to get the community as a whole to opine on it. Now, it could have been, the question could have been posed in different ways, but I think one wanted to simplify it and we've got the answer. The community is of the view that we should not be imposing a discriminatory measure in the law in relation to these issues, and we need to move forward. And the Parliament will obviously look at that and legislate appropriately, given what the Australian community has obviously said.
Our guest on Open House is Philip Ruddock. He is a long time, he was the father of the House before he retired at the last election, a long time minister in several governments, including having been Attorney General and Minister for Immigration. And he's the Mayor of Hornsby, and he's just been appointed to head up a committee of eminent persons to look into this issue of religious freedom. Philip, why did the government ask you to do this job, and why did it ask you to do it now?
You'd have to ask the government. I think the answer in relation to the timing is quite clear. I mean, these issues are obviously in the minds of those people who are legislating to deal with the very question of whether we recognise same-sex relations, and that matter is going to be dealt with. And the question is, are there adequate protections? There are people arguing there are not, and are going to propose them. They are likely to be some adopted, I imagine, and others left over. And we've been asked to look at it. And when I was asked to undertake that task, and particularly as to who else might be appropriate to consider these matters. I proffered the view that I would assist constructively with people who could bring a variety of views, given their experience and background, to bear. And there are issues in relation to human rights generally.
So how are you going to go about your job? Do you see it as a consensus-building job or a technical exercise?
At the end of the day, in my view, you should always seek to get as wide a spectrum of views as you can, and to know where people are. And then we will have to opine on it as to the way forward. And it's not until you know the issues you're going to be asked to canvass that you can come to a final view on those matters.
But once again, as you canvass those views, you're also obviously shaping the debate by the way you do your work, unless you sit in judgment, as it were, like judges on a bench.
No,
will you be helping to shape the debate as well?
No, I've had to do this before in relation to citizenship matters. Mm. And, ultimately, when you come to a concluded view, the legislators have a look at it and see whether it's helpful advice that will help them provide a way forward.
How long do you think it'll take, Philip?
Well, we know that I've been asked to ensure that it's completed by the 31st of March.
Well, you need to get your skates on. Have you worked out?
I'm waiting for the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet to give us advice as to how we bring the group together, and we'll probably do that in the next little while.
Now, I'm not going to get a satisfactory answer to this question, but I feel in some ways I need to ask it. And you know what it is. The view is that this issue has been used by some as a way of, the issue has clearly been used by a lot of people in politics for their own ends, as well as whatever they care about the issue, and not taking away from that, there are political agendas everywhere. Is this a matter that could become critical for the Prime Minister's leadership?
Well, I don't know, I'm not party to those matters. When I'm pressed about the politics of today as against perhaps earlier points in time, I often make the point that when I first got into public life 40 years ago, people were about rebuilding the nation after the Second World War and getting the economy right, and people came together on the basis that they needed to serve the community rather than serve themselves. And I hope that people in public life come to it with that perspective, and that means that you're not trying to score points, you're not trying to undermine people, you're trying to look constructively at issues to look at the best way forward for the people of Australia.
And are you observing the best behaviour from our elected representatives?
I think you're asking me to opine in matters that I think I'm best to leave alone.
Yes, well played, well played.
Mm.
Look, Philip, can I observe that the job that you're doing with the other eminent persons, and they are... I'm not going to engage in the criticism of your panel that others have. I think that's just silly. The job that you're doing is as important as any job that's been done in protecting what Australia has, I think. And I want to thank you for doing it.
Well, thank you for that. But, you know, I do have a view that we've got to get the balance right.
Yes.
The interesting aspect of all religions is that... we come with a perspective we have to recognise that was a product of the culture and the times in which a lot of the messages that we received were given. Some of those issues about which you will find biblical injunctions that justify particular behaviour that I would find unacceptable, still have to be addressed. In other words, you know, I have a view about capital punishment, yet you'll find biblical endorsement for the death penalty. You'll find biblical endorsement for slavery. These are a product of their time, and I think we have to ensure that not every perspective that was written at an earlier point in time that reflects different cultures is necessarily what a modern society conscious of civil and political rights and which we're party to should adopt.
No, well, could I suggest to you, and you're a practicing Christian, the job that you're doing in protecting free speech is an inherently Christian act. It was Christians who led the campaign against slavery. Social reform is conducted by Christians. Why? Because it's the right thing to do as you follow Jesus to see that. I mean, is that the view that you take, if you've taken
it's
in public
view
life?
I take, it's not necessarily a view that is always adopted. And people look for justification for other steps that were written at a particular time in history, which we no longer endorse.
Yeah, yeah. Does your faith?
You know, I mean, I do make the point in relation to Islam. A lot of the writings reflect the experiences of different times, times in which they were at war, and times when they were at peace and building. And you can find justification for steps that you would question in some writings at a particular point in time.
How much has your faith shaped your approach to public life?
Well, obviously, very significantly. I mean, I'm still very much involved in the life of my own church, and I hope in the way in which I conduct myself, I do witness to others. I do recognise that we all have to make our own judgment in relation to these things, and at the end of the day, we'll be judged by the way in which we conduct ourselves.
Well, thank you for the job you're about to do, and thank you for speaking with us on Open House.
Always a pleasure, Stephen.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.